Mr. Robin McKeown from Kirkstown Assembly.
I would like you to turn with me, please, to Genesis chapter 24. Genesis chapter 24. We'll read the closing verses of this chapter. Verse 61. And Rebekah arose, and her damsels, and they rode upon the camels, and followed the man, the unnamed servant that you've been hearing about. And the servant took Rebekah and went his way. And as he came from the way of the well Lehi Roi, for he dwelt in the south country, and Isaac went out to meditate. Maybe if some of you have a marginal reading, you'll see that the little word pray is there. Isaac went out to meditate in the field at eventide. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she lighted of the camel. For she had said unto the servant, What man is this that walketh in the field to meet us? And the servant had said, It is my master. Therefore she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all things that he had done. And Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Trust God will bless this reading from his word with what we have heard already. Like our brother, I pondered those two hymns also at the beginning of this session. And I'm glad, brethren and sisters, that already in the conference gathering for the ministry, our attention has been drawn to that great truth of the coming of the Lord. Maybe there's something lacking betimes in the ministry that we hear so little about it. And I want us just in these closing verses of this chapter, I want to draw your attention a little to the journey and to the meeting. The very thought of his coming, bright in the glory, where my Lord is gone before, we're going to be gathered soon, very soon. Now let me just say a little bit. Some might wonder, where do you get the coming of the Lord from Genesis 24? Well, you remember, don't you? The Lord with the two on the road to Emmaus. You remember, he began in all the scriptures, beginning at Moses and all the prophets, and in all the scriptures he shared with them the things concerning himself. I want us to look at some things here that concern Christ. Another thing too is, I suppose there's no passage in the New Testament maybe more emphatic about the importance of the application of Old Testament scriptures to present day things than we have in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Now let's get the setting of this chapter, and I hope you'll agree with what I have in my mind. You remember chapter 22? That's a great chapter of the altar. Did you ever notice that when we see Isaac there in Genesis 22 at the altar, did you ever notice we don't see him again in any activity until this verse that we have read here, and Isaac came from the altar? We don't see Isaac in any activity until we have him coming out in the eventide to meet his bride. And oh, beloved saints, it's a long time since Calvary. And our blessed Lord to this world, he is not disclosed. Where is he? Well, look at Genesis 22 again. Very interesting when you read verse 19. We read about Abraham. He returned, and along with the young men, he went to Beersheba. But Isaac isn't mentioned. In that verse we read about Abraham returning, joining with the young men who had kept the asses, and off they go to Beersheba. Of course Isaac was with them, but Isaac isn't mentioned. He went to the father's house, but he's not seen again until he comes out in the field at eventide, and he meets Rebekah at the end of the journey. Oh, beloved saints, we'll see him soon. Won't be long until he comes out. The altar's behind him forever. Its fruits and its benefits we enjoy still. But he's in the Father's house. And soon he's coming out bright in the glory where my Lord has gone before, safe in the glory to go out no more. Did you ever notice at the end of chapter 22 we have the birth of Rebekah mentioned? When you come into chapter 23, we have the death of Sarah mentioned. But before we have the death of Sarah mentioned, we have the birth of Rebekah at the end of chapter 22. And if Rebekah speaks of the church, and Isaac speaks of Christ, Sarah speaks of Israel. Let us remember this. God still had a message for Israel. In spite of their cruelty at the cross. And we have the church born in Acts 2 at Pentecost. And then what do we have? The disciples fulfilling the words of the Lord. Ye shall be witnesses unto me in Jerusalem and all Judea, and then to the uttermost parts of the earth. But first of all, Israel's going to hear again. And so Peter preaches in Acts 2 and 14 to the men of Jerusalem and Judea, and in verse 22 to the men of Israel. But the church is born. And so at the end of Genesis 22 we have the birth of Rebekah mentioned, and then we have the death of Sarah. And oh, how sad it is. We think of Abraham coming to mourn and to weep for her. I say, Jehovah got no pleasure out of Israel's blindness. He got no pleasure out of Israel's rejection. If we might speak typically, he mourned and he wept for her. But then chapter 24 brings the bride for Isaac. Reference has already been made to this bride. I don't want to say a lot about the early pieces. There is so much in the chapter. But we know how she was won, don't we? She was won by what she heard and what she saw and was given. And what did she hear? She heard from that servant who is nameless in the chapter. She heard of the greatness of Abraham. She heard all about the father's greatness and the father's wealth. But she heard more. She heard about the father's son. You remember the servant told them how that Sarah, when she was old, she bore Isaac. She heard about the birth that was somewhat unique. And when we think of how we were one, it concerned the greatness of the father and the uniqueness of the birth of the Father's Son, the virgin birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. But she heard more. She heard that unto Isaac Abraham had given all that he had. And I turn to John's Gospel, chapter 23 and chapter 3 and verse 35. And what do I read? The Father loveth the Son and hath given all things into his hand. We have heard of the wealth of our heavenly Isaac. But she learned more. She was won by what she was shown and what she was given. She was given the jewels of silver. I tell you, our hearts have been won by redemption. Thank God for that. And she was given those jewels of gold, all the glory and the deity of Christ. Isn't this what means all things to us in a paltry world? But then you remember chapter 25, how it begins. Abraham comes in the scene again, and he takes again to wife Keturah. God is going to take up Israel again only when the bride is home in the glory. And that woman's name, Keturah, means fragrant. And Israel is going to become fragrant to Jehovah again. And if you read on at the beginning of chapter 25, you read that Keturah was fruitful. And Israel is going to become fruitful to Jehovah again. Oh, what a story. What a lovely scenario we have in these chapters. But I want to come to this bride. And I want to speak a little about the journey. And a little bit about the meeting. Do you ever notice in the chapter of 67 verses, there's only one verse used to describe the journey? I wonder why. If you talked to Rebecca as she made her way, I tell you, she could have told you a lot likely. When we'd break the journey for the night and she'd look up to the stars of heaven, she wondered, when will I see him? Have you ever had longings like that? William Blaine, the poet, wrote a lovely poem. I'll not try to quote it to you now. It's about an aged pilgrim. And he goes through it. Spring, summer, autumn and winter. And he describes the old pilgrim. And he's sitting by the fire. And his thoughts are full and he's musing. And what is occupying his mind, I'll tell you. He's thinking of the coming of his feet. Beloved saints, tell me, do we know anything about it? The nearness of his coming. A journey, and only one verse, verse 61, is used to describe it. Just one verse. Dear sister, if you were to write about the journey to date, I tell you, you'd need more than the back of a postage stamp, wouldn't you? Maybe you could write rings. You could maybe tell about the tears that no one ever saw for the family. Maybe, dear brother, you could tell about the trials you had about the assembly. Times maybe you went home from an oversight meeting and went to your room and you shed the tears, the journey. Maybe you could tell about the trials over family sickness. And you wondered. And you wondered, would the boy or the girl ever recover? Oh, the journey can be so tedious at times. And yet only one verse is given to the journey. I ask you why. Could I suggest two reasons to you? Do you know what helps to shorten the journey? The anticipation of the meeting. You ever thought of that? The anticipation of the meeting. Do you ever look at the writings of Peter, 1 Peter chapter 1? Think of Rebecca. As she traveled this journey, and she would think of Isaac, whom having not seen, ye love. Got it? In whom, though now you see him not, she had never seen him. She had never set her eyes on Isaac. But she loved him. Whom having not seen you love, in whom though now you see him not, yet believing, you rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. You see what happened to John the Apostle. What else could he say but, "Even so come, Lord Jesus"? Couldn't he have written about the journey? His incarceration on the Isle of Patmos and all the problems, but he was thinking of the coming. I tell you, it'll help you on the road. The trials and the problems, the anticipation of the meeting, the love of Christ constraineth us, whom having not seen, ye love. Have you ever thought about it? Or ever, to put it another way, have you ever thought about him? Oh, blessed hope. He's coming again. He's the one we have never seen, but we love him. There are some old saints here today. I wonder how many times you've sat around the table on the Lord's Day morning. I don't mind admitting times I get tears in my eyes when I think of him. We love him. We've never seen him. I'll tell you another reason, I think, that only one verse is used to describe the journey. Can you imagine what it would be for Rebecca when she would see him for the first time? I'll tell you, brethren and sisters, when we get home to glory and look back, we'll get things into perspective then. Maybe we'll not even need a verse to describe the journey. You see, we're looking from time, trying to focus on eternity. If only we could view it from eternity and look at time. Surely the Apostle Paul was entering into these very things when he wrote to the Romans in chapter 8, and he says, "I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed in us." You see, Paul was measuring the present for the future. We should be doing that all the time, weighing the present by the future. And if we did, well then we would reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. But we go a little further, and we think of that same apostle as he wrote to the Corinthians. In chapter 4 of that second epistle, he's been talking about his problems and his difficulties. He could talk about being troubled and about being perplexed and about being persecuted and about being cast down. He says, "Our light affliction." He says it's light. "Our light affliction, which is but for a moment," see, a moment, just one verse, "worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory." He's measuring time by eternity, and he finds it's only a moment. He's measuring the affliction by the glory, and he says it's a weight of glory, so the affliction is light. Would to God we could do it more as we journey. I love the words of Mary Jane Walker's lovely hymn, "I journey through a desert drear and wild, yet is my heart by such sweet thoughts beguiled of him on whom I lean. My strength, my stay, I can forget the sorrows of the way." Maybe you could say, all right, and I wouldn't disagree with you. Deep waters crossed life's pathway. The hedge of thorns was sharp. Now these lie all behind me. Oh, for a well-tuned harp. If we could measure time by eternity, the journey, just one verse. But let us move on and look at the meeting for a moment or two. In verse 61 we read these words, "Rebecca arose." In verse 62 we read that Isaac came. Don't you see the inevitable's going to happen? They're going to meet. In fact, it is an impossibility for them not to meet. Rebecca arose and Isaac came, and we're going to have that meeting in the air. Thank God for it. What a gathering that will be. Rebecca arose and Isaac came. Now when you look at verse 63, I find this very comforting when we think of it typically in relation to Christ. And Isaac went out to meditate or to pray in the field at the eventide. You see the time of day, don't you? It's the evening time. Brethren and sisters, that's where we are in this day of grace. I hope we understand the morning of the day is past. We'll never see the noontide of the day again. It's the evening time. Let us our heads lift up. Jesus will come. It's the evening time. The evening shadows lengthen over the land. I don't want to talk about the troubles in this province or in this world, but should they all point and say the shadows are across the land. It's the evening tide, and our blessed Lord is coming. What was he doing, Isaac, at this time of day? He went out into the field to meditate. Or as I said to you earlier, the marginal rendering, to pray. I want to think of that particular rendering. We're near the end of the journey. I hope we'll believe that. Won't be long now. And what's our heavenly Isaac doing as we reach the end of the journey? I tell you, beloved saints, he's engaged on our behalf. Go again to Romans 8. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea rather that is risen again, who is even at the right hand of God, who maketh intercession for us. You see, when you're in the trial, he's interceding for us. And the worse the trial, the more he's interceding for us. He's engaged on our behalf on the very eve of his coming. Like Moses in that lovely chapter in Genesis, his hands will be up to the going down of the sun. He'll never let us down. Never. Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 25, he is able to save completely all them that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. Oh, thank God for the interceding Christ, the one who went to Calvary, the one who died there, who rose triumphantly from the tomb, who's gone to the Father's right hand, into the Father's house. I tell you, he's interceding. It's the evening time, and his coming is very near. And if this meant a lot to Rebecca as she drew toward the end of the journey, I ask you, what did it mean to Isaac? We've heard from John 14. You remember, he spoke those words to troubled disciples, and this sweet, comforting words of the Lord's coming. You know, in this passage, typically, especially, it's for the comfort of God's people. Our brother mentioned review and reward. That's not here in this passage, you see. It's not in figure in this passage. It's found in other places. Here it's for comfort. And the Lord is coming. And I think of this Isaac. I hope my brethren will agree with me, but I can't read these verses without feeling that Isaac's lonely. And I want to say of my blessed Lord, there amid the songs of heaven, sweeter to his ear, is the footfall through the desert ever drawing near. There made ready are the mansions, glorious, bright and fair, but the bride the Father gave him still is wanting there. His heart will never really be satisfied in all its fullness until he has his bride with him. I hope we understand that that's what he wants. Have you ever looked at the high priestly prayer of the Lord in John 17? Verse 24, you'd think the Lord was praying in heaven, wouldn't you? Listen to this verse. Father, I will that them also whom thou hast given me be with me where I am. Well, where was he? Well, it was either the upper room or on the way to Gethsemane. But where I am, he's thinking of his position in the glory. Our great high priest who ever liveth to make intercession for us. He wants us with him. Could I say and speak reverently and say he'll never rest until we're there? Until he gets the bride of his purchase. And though the cost of the purchase, he wants his bride by his side, that he might present it to himself according to Ephesians 5. But look again, please, at these verses. We read in verse 64 that Rebecca lifted up her eyes. In verse 63, in the middle of the verse, we read that he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming. Rebecca lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she lighted up the camel. Mr. Darby's rendering says she sprang from the camel. Did you know the camels are mentioned some 18 times in this chapter? They are the animals of wilderness journey and desert travel. But you know, brethren, when she got to Isaac, she sprang from the camel. She's finished with the journey. Won't we leave all the trappings of the wilderness behind? For this world is just that, a wilderness wide. I have nothing to seek or to choose. Oh, friend, today, fellow believer, here's the meeting. She lifted up her eyes, and she saw Isaac. He lifted up his eyes, and he saw the camels. They were coming. Would you believe today if we suggested to you, he's watching the very footfall through the desert, ever drawing near, but there came a moment when their eyes met. Oh, what a moment. I'm going to suggest to you that our experience at this point will be different to Rebecca. She asked the servant, what man is this? I don't believe I'll ever ask that question. When the Lord comes, I'll not need to ask that question. We've been hearing already, he's so unique in so many ways. He'll be unique in resplendent glory. There'll not be another to equal him in the glory. Oh, but I shall know him. I shall know him when redeemed by his side I will stand. I shall know him, I shall know him by the print of the nails in his hands. He'll be unique and will not need to ask, what man is this? He's the altogether lovely one. This is my beloved. This is my friend.